welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Hello, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Hello, I was trying to think of a clever way to tie in the never-ending story to our intro, and I was like, repeat it a million times.
I was getting ready to jump into a fantasy world.
I was ready to be a fat, obnoxious kid.
I'm already a fat, obnoxious kid.
Perfect!
Let's do this!
This week we read The Neverending Story by Michael End, or Ende.
One of those.
He's German, so you probably pronounce the E, but I don't actually know. And I'm going to go ahead and say the book's pretty much unspoilerable.
So. Oh, yeah, it is fair to say if you are listening to a podcast about the never-ending story and you get pissed off because something gets spoiled for you, then there's something wrong with you.
The book got published like 40 years ago, and also, who is listening to this besides people who've already read the book?
Yeah, exactly.
So, we read the book this week because we decided it was about time for a reader request, and this was on the list. There was a movie made of it, in the 80s?
I don't know exactly when it was
made.
Late
70s? Early 80s? Something like that. It's fair to say that when Ben and I started reading the book, we were completely unbiased, though, because the only thing either one of us remembered about the movie was that there was a giant white dog dragon thing flying around. Literally the only thing I remembered about the movie.
Same thing.
So I was pretty... came to this with pretty fresh eyes.
Yeah, I always assumed the dog dragon thing was actually the main character.
Me too. Like, it was the one, like, guiding the little boy, like, through the world. Like, I totally always thought that. But no.
No.
I was totally wrong.
Nope, yeah.
Maybe it would have been better if Falcor had been the main character.
Maybe it would have been.
So our genre for the week is our, you know, extremely broad umbrellas of YA and fantasy.
Yes. it is both of those, and I don't know that those genres need any farther defining. I guess it's in kind of the high fantasy side of things. Which is defined by any fantasy story where the settings seem like things you would see when you're high.
So, like, a low fantasy would be, Game of Thrones, Book 1?
Yeah, like, more swords and less sorcery and more men and fewer weird sentient creatures.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Game of Thrones versus Dance with Dragons, maybe. Although, Dance with Dragons is still not crazy magical, I guess.
But... yeah. Also, I gather any fantasy novel where they use the word fuck is usually considered low fantasy just on principle.
I just want to mention German every episode.
That's our new goal.
We're going to tweet him every week and be like, we mentioned you again, lol. Until he's like, who are these people? Yeah.
Until he comes by our Twitter feed and goes, no one follows them, who cares?
I'm gonna go back to not writing the sixth book.
That's right. Get on it, girl.
It is also in the vein Ben and I were talking about of old school YA, where he made the observation that a lot of, like, the older YA we've read is longer and denser than the more modern YA that we've read.
Yes, and maybe less good.
Yeah, we thought of Watership Down as also like 400 pages in a long read, and we didn't like that much either, because we love crushing people's childhood's cherished memories.
That's why I laughed out of context at the beginning of this when you said that this was a reader request, because it occurs to me every time we do a requested book, one or both of us doesn't like it very much.
I was actually to say we're really good at not liking reader requests.
Maybe we'd get more if we could actually like one.
Hey, we liked The Joy Luck Club, and that was a reader request.
Yeah, no, we did like that one.
Thank you, Amy, for your excellent recommendation. Whoever recommended this, you suck.
Whoever recommended this and Bone Shaker and Watership Down and Ready Player One.
You're all the worst.
All of you can inhabit the bag full of dicks that the books do. Have fun in there.
Man, we're awful. We do not like the things people request.
We don't like people's requests. I don't think we like people.
That must be it. That's why we love books so much.
That's right.
We can't function in society. Must read book.
That's why we are carefully maintaining our dozens of listeners. Because every time someone's like, oh, this might be interesting, within two episodes, we're like, whatever you and everything you stand for is stupid.
We do that on a regular basis. That's true. If you're listening to this, you're an idiot. So... plot synopsis.
What is our plot synopsis? I don't even remember. It's
a boy called Dipshit enjoys fantasy garbage.
Oh, right.
So, one of the... I actually looked it up, and I think the German title is something like Fantasy Story from A to Z. It's not The Neverending Story. Hmm. And one of the things that End does in the book... is that each chapter starts with a successive letter of the alphabet. So it's, you know, literally 26 chapters going from A to Z. So we thought it'd be funny to write a plot synopsis that did the same thing, but we got to G and then gave up.
Yeah.
So you just get a boy called a dipshit, enjoys fantasy garbage.
Yes, and if you are judging us, then see how long it takes you to write a sentence or two that starts with every successive letter of the alphabet in order without repetitions.
Better yet, reader contest. If you can finish the plot synopsis with the rest of the alphabet, you can be a guest, or we'll read your book suggestion next.
We'll figure something out.
We'll do something for you.
And we will call this contest Enda's Game.
Oh, man.
Yes!
Also, in the near future, I would like to let it be known that I'm hoping to post the official Novel Ideas drinking game.
Oh.
Because one of them is every time we reference another book that we've read for the podcast, you take a drink. Well, you would already be getting some kind of tipsy in this episode.
I would say the over-under on drinks per episode with that rule only would have to be right around 5.
Yeah. Especially the farther we go. All right. So just for anyone who doesn't know the plot of this, I mean, I guess I shouldn't sound so skeptical because I didn't know the plot of it going in. But like Ben said, if you're listening to the episode, essentially, this kid, Bastian Balthazar Bucks, is this nerdy, fat, annoying kid who gets picked on all the time. And he runs into a bookstore for shelter and ends up snagging a book, from the owner without pain or anything. It's calling to him, and he goes and hides out in the attic of his school and reads this book for a day. And he's reading about this grand adventure in the book, and as it goes along, it kind of seems like maybe he's kind of interacting with the book, and then he gets actually sucked into the story. So that's just kind of your basic setup for anyone who wants to kind of know what we're talking about. So, setting.
Fantastica!
/ your imagination.
Yes, possibly your imagination. probably Bastion's imagination.
Yeah. Fantastica is the world of the book. Oh, we should also mention the book that he is reading in The Neverending Story is also called The Neverending Story. And I kind of wondered if the original edition of the American version looked like it, the version of the book.
Oh, yeah, with, like, the red cover and the...
the two snakes and yeah, the... Yeah. I would totally design the book that way if I was in charge of designing that book.
Right. Well, that only makes sense.
Yeah.
I wonder what the... I wonder what the title of the never-ending story inside is in German.
Yeah, if it's still the never-ending story, or if it's the German title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we mention this book was originally in German?
We've implied it. I don't think we actually mentioned it directly.
I just think it's weird because I think the name Bastian Balthazar Bux is, like, as British as you can get. I mean, if you name your kid Bastian, like, you have to be British. Right. I feel like that's a rule.
I'm Nigel, and this is my son, Bastian.
Yeah. But it was written by a German guy, so maybe it's in Germany?
I'm Gunther, and this is my son, Bastian.
What? Bastian Balthazar.
Bastian Balthazar Bux.
Beeblebrox.
Bastian Beeblebrox.
Balthazar.
Buttasaur.
Or is Ben... Ben was... Okay, so we mentioned that his name is 3Bs, triple B. And Ben, out of nowhere, just goes, 3Dub. Which makes me because dub is definitely not a B.
I don't think I even meant to say that. It just came out.
So, if we ever mention 3Dub, we're talking about Bastian.
Bastian, 3Dub.
3Dub. My good friend, 3Dub.
Oh, goodness.
Point of view tense is, I actually just realized we didn't put the tense down. The point of view is this kind of objective narrator for a good chunk of it, because Bastian's reading the book within the book, and that's narrated by a more omniscient, distant narrator, but then you kind of have the narrator who also is sometimes going close to Bastian and through his thoughts. So you have third person close and omniscient.
Yeah, and it is past tense, if anyone cares.
Alright, that's what I figured, but... So, who is our protagonist?
3Dub!
Obviously. No, it's some other random guy we haven't mentioned yet.
That's right. Well, for the first half of the book, it's kind of not him.
Yeah. But, really, the whole thing, it does... Even the first half of the plot does end up centering around Bastian.
Yeah, it does. But...
But he's really not doing anything.
True. Well, the first half of the book, every character is completely static, I think.
That's, yeah.
And in the second half of the book, all but one character is completely static, I think.
By virtue of being the only one who changes, Bastian has to be the protagonist.
Yes, and he changes from being someone you don't care about into a dick, and then back.
A little better at the end.
Ultimately proving nothing.
he gains a little bit of a spine at the end, at least. I guess.
He does. He's a little different when he gets back.
But, yeah, he's still an annoying fat white kid.
He should start a podcast with his sister.
He should watch movies and make boring commentary on them.
That's right. I'd listen to that.
Yeah, he starts out, he's this wimpy kid. As I mentioned, he's chubby, he doesn't really have any friends, gets picked on a lot. His mom's dead, and his dad is like a dentist or something.
I'm not sure if he's a dentist, it almost sounds like he's like a dental lab technician or something.
Yeah, I guess the important thing is that his dad doesn't really seem to be paying that much attention to him.
Right.
And so he feels pretty much completely isolated, which is why he's so drawn into this fantasy world that he's reading about. And in the second half of the book, once he actually gets sucked into the fantasy world, and starts making all these wishes to be all these things that he's not, so, you know, handsome and strong and capable and all this stuff, and he starts to forget who he was. He starts to get really annoying because he's so full of himself and confident in his decision-making and is kind of like the I know what to do character.
Yeah, like definitely edging over the line into full-blown hubris, mm-hmm. as the plot such as it is develops.
Yeah, he narrowly escapes being stuck there forever and essentially going insane, so...
Yeah, and that was actually an interesting scene. That might have been the really only moment in the entire second half of the book that held my attention.
Yeah. So, and the ultimate realization that Bastion makes is at the end he realizes that all he really craves is love, and, you know, like, he wants to go home and back to his father, and then he has to kind of go through this whole... thing to, like, regain himself and get back to the real world and stuff.
Which is a very YA type of theme slash conclusion.
Yeah. I was expecting, like, you know, when he was getting too big for his britches, I was definitely expecting, like, the pride and humility theme.
Yep.
The love one almost seemed to come out of nowhere.
I agree.
Just because at the beginning, we never actually meet his father. We just hear him, you know, going, oh my, I don't think my dad really cares about me. But we haven't met him. We haven't seen their relationship at all. And then he basically doesn't think about his father again until the very end. And then he's like, I want love. And I was like, what?
Okay.
When have you been... Okay, I guess that makes sense. But it did seem kind of weird to me.
I think it was Michael N. going, oh, I'm almost to the back of the alphabet. This is a YA book. There, I better get some love and...
Power of love.
Some power of love and friendship in here. What's the one true wish you had all along? Why, it's love! Woo!
It's like, no, it's to be a hot, strong dude forever. Yeah,
exactly.
God! No, I'm glad he does not stay as he is in most of the second half, because I found him to be nearly intolerable.
Well, he overpowered himself.
Yeah.
Like, any overpowered character is... Well, they tend to be slightly dickish because of that, but they definitely are less interesting.
He turned himself into a Mary Sue...
Yeah.
If you know that terminology.
Totally.
Essentially,
or for a anyone, Gary Stu.
A Gary perhaps. Stu, yes. Yeah. Anyone who doesn't know, it's essentially when you're writing a story and one of the characters is, like, magical and can do no wrong and has all these wonderful abilities. And it's super common, like, in fan fiction. If you're writing about, let's say you're writing a fan fiction of... Well, I guess the never-ending story is not a great example of something that you liked, and you inserted, like, a new original character among all these characters that everyone knows.
Right.
And your new original character is, like, the special snowflake among all these other characters. That's when you've Mary Sued or Gary Stewed your character.
Yeah, and extra points if it's a self-insertion crossed with a... I think there's
most
supposed
the time,
to be a little bit of that, too.
Yeah. Kind of like what the author wishes, like, they could be.
Right.
I doubt Michael End wishes he was a 10-year-old boy, but...
Hey, you never know.
I think a lot of people can relate to wanting to be the strongest and the wisest and handsome, you know, or good-looking and all that crap, and have everyone worship you and all that shit that he goes through,
right.
So...
And they never stop to think through that if they're actually all of those things, no one would like them anymore.
Right.
Bastion used to be fun when I could shove him on his face and call him names.
When I could occasionally get the better of him. But right. Now he's just annoying.
He's good at, he's too good at everything. The only thing I can beat him in now is Scrabble.
I wonder if that's a thing, like, at the beginning when no one likes him because he's just, like, doesn't stand up for himself and he's just, like, a dull dud, you know? And at the end when he's, like, powered himself up so much that nobody likes him again because he's too perfect.
Because it turns out he's just not very likable.
It turns out, no matter what, no one really likes Bastion. Except for Atreyu, for some reason.
Well, we only have the narrator's word for that.
Let's talk about Atreyu, who's kind of like the pseudo-protagonist of the first half of the book.
Yeah, he's on a quest to save Fantastica.
From the nothing.
Yeah, which was actually kind of a neat concept,
I thought so, too.
And...
Although the conclusion, or the solution, was, like, give the childlike empress a new name.
And no one here can create anything, so we have to bring in a human.
That was kind of weird. And then Bastion's like... Moonchild. I was like, God damn it.
Damn it, Bastion.
At least he wasn't like, Samantha.
That's true. Humans, maybe we just take that ability to come up with stuff a little too for granted.
Yeah.
To sympathize with the Fantasticans. They're like, well, we just have to give the childlike Empress a new name. And if they'd said it to Gabs, she'd be like, what, that bitch? Fantastica is saved!
Like, in the first 15 pages. All right.
But that's why the human world doesn't work that way. Because no matter what your name is, if you are a public figure, you will be given many new names.
Very true. Earth has already been saved many times over.
That's right. Like, on a daily basis.
But yeah, Atreyu is kind of the prototypical, like, young heroic type. He's kind of everything that Bastion wants to be.
Yeah.
So he's already smart and resourceful and...
green-skinned.
Is he green-skinned? Yeah. I didn't remember that.
Bastion probably doesn't want to be that.
He wants to be a frog.
I could accept that.
he makes friends easily. He knows what's up. He's just a very capable young man at the age of 10. I should continue to point out these guys are only 10 years old.
And he has the strength and courage and intelligence to defeat the many trials that await him. Or just has, you know, the exact right measure of fate to waltz through every single one of them almost effortlessly.
He has the magical amulet.
Arryn! Always capitalized.
Yeah. A-U-R-Y-N?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Arryn is the real protagonist.
Arryn! Arryn just fucks with everyone. Yeah, so one of the problems I had with Atreyu is, you know, oh, he runs into this spider creature who bites him and he's gonna die. And then for some reason manages to get out of it that, oh, when I bite you, you can transport anywhere in Fantastica. I don't really know how that happens.
That's a stupid poison.
So he transports, and then he just happens to stumble upon these people who can cure his poison, and then he has to go through these three tricky gates, and it turns out that you get through all three mainly just through walking through them. That's about it.
Right, and it sure seems like it's set up that, oh, if you have these special qualities or characteristics, you can pass the gates, and, well, that might be true, but we have no evidence of it from what actually happened.
Or, I guess one kind of sad moment is when he, like, goes to visit that sad turtle tortoise creature.
Oh, yeah, his horse die.
But it's not because he has some kind of, like, special resistance to the depression swamps or whatever. It's because Arryn, like, protects him from feeling depressed.
Yes,
Arryn, and his horse is just like, I'm gonna die now.
Arryn will protect you, but not your friends or pets. I don't know.
Because the horse can talk.
Yeah. Usually if a whole scene was dedicated to the death of a horse, I would roll my eyes. But since this was a talking horse, I wasn't sure how to interpret it.
Yeah. So he goes through all that, and then he discovers, oh, he has to give the child, like, Empress a new name somehow. And he goes back to her and tells her that, but that he couldn't find a human. And she's like, oh, well, you managed to bring him along anyway. And then, yeah, that's about it.
You managed to bring him... Yeah, so, let's see. Go to the swamp, you have to fight the swamp, except you don't. And then fight the spider, except you don't. And you get poison, you're gonna die, except you don't. And then there's the gates, which you have to have the...
through.
Yeah, the special characteristics to pass, except you just pass them.
Oh, and then he goes to the village with the wolf that's been stalking him, who's now chained up. But then he gets found by the luck dragon who saves him.
How lucky!
Yeah, Falcor being a luck dragon gets them out of a lot of shitty situations by virtue of being a luck dragon.
Ooh, alternate title for this book, Deus Ex Machina, the novel.
Yeah. I was also thinking, like, having a creature, you know, who gets out of things just by being lucky because he's a luck dragon, it's kind of reminding me a little bit of, like, a Hitchhiker's Guide. Like, improbability drive.
That's impossible. No, just very, very improbable.
Yeah.
Drink, kind of by the way.
Falcor, how are we going to do this? By luck, of course. Okay.
to say, it almost seemed like, Hitchhiker's Guide is, I guess, a good comparison. As I said, it almost seems like a Discworld sort of thing.
Yeah, I haven't read that, so.
Right, I mean, I don't know, I don't recall there being a character who was, actually, I take that back. There has been at least one character who was unusually lucky, but just like that idea of, here are all these powered up heroes and all their stuff, and I don't know, maybe when you come down to it, the freakishly lucky person, the person whose power is luck, is actually like the strongest one.
Yeah. Is getting out of all that shit without even trying.
Right.
So yeah, oh, and then I guess we should also mention that when Atreyu finally gets back to like the Ivory Tower, you can only get up to the Childlike Empress's room like if her powers just like take you up there. So you can't actually like, climb any stairs or anything, like you can't get there on your own. The tower has to like envelop you into the room or whatever it was that it did to him. So Atreyu doesn't even have to climb a flight of fucking stairs at the end to get into a tower.
The great hero.
And for some reason he's best friends with Bastion, as we mentioned.
Yes, though, again, as I also mentioned, we only have the narrator's word for that. We keep being told that they are now friends, and they are great friends, except the only thing they ever do is squabble.
The only thing that ever happens is Atreyu's like, hey, you know how I'm, like, smart and capable and stuff? Here's why you're dumb. And Bastion's like, no, you're dumb! And then it turns out that Atreyu's right, because he's always right.
Right, because Bastion is always dumb. Conversely. Maybe the narrator is, like, a historical apologist for Bastion in Fantastica.
Like, going back and rewriting the terror that is Bastion.
Or an apologist for Atreyu might make more sense. He's just like, oh, but they were really friends the whole time. And I don't know who he'd be an apologist for, but they were friends the whole time, but then they just fight the whole time and eventually go to war with each other.
And yeah, Bastion, like, exiles him, and then, yeah.
He's like, no, just trying to smooth it over after the fact. See, he helped him get back to the real world, but in reality, Atreyu's motivation was, get this fucker out of here.
Yeah. I'm sick of Bastion's shit.
He's trying to just... He's saved Fantastica, whatever, but then he tries to make himself the dictator.
Yeah, it's like, well, you can't leave until you've completed all your stories. And Atreyu's like, I'll complete them, God, just get out of here. Leave me alone.
Right. I'm not doing you a favor.
Clean up all your damn messes, Bastion. Piece of shit.
Stupid human. Moonchild. God, I wish we'd just all been enveloped by nothing.
I hope people's childhoods are just, like, crashing to the ground. Just getting destroyed. I do want to talk about the Childlike Empress / Moonchild.
Yes.
A little bit.
The golden-eyed commander of wishes.
Oh, yeah!
An equally great title.
Well, see, now she might have been my favorite character for the, like, chapter that she was around.
Oh, she has a really interesting, like, power set and setting, kinda.
Yeah, she's, like, kind of this all-powerful, godlike creature, because, you know, if she dies, Fantastica just disappears. You know, Arin is this metal of hers that gives you all these powers and stuff. So she basically has unlimited power. But then she doesn't really use it because she just doesn't really seem to care. She's kind of like a less annoying Tom Bombadil, almost, in that regard.
An unannoying Tom Bombadil.
Because she never says, my boots are yellow, my coat is whatever, fuck.
Unannoying Tom Bombadil is a contender for episode title. Early on here.
But I was kind of thinking of her as, I wasn't sure exactly what that chart was, but as like a chaotic neutral or neutral chaotic, whatever order those fall into, where she doesn't really see things in terms of good and bad, which they say throughout the book. She thinks that all wishes, you know, hold power and change and shape things, so they're all, you know, necessary and good for that reason, even if it's a bad wish. And she never really interferes. Like, when Bastion's totally screwing things up and trying to crown himself emperor, she never shows up and is like, hey, man, like, you should stop that. She just is like, yeah, you know, if he forgets who he is and is doomed to a life of madness here, whatever. She just doesn't really seem to have that much of a stake in other characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. There it is. It is chaotic neutral.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for. Yeah, I mean, totally. It's definitely the setup of, no, whatever is, and that's just how it works here.
Yeah.
Oh, but their armies are killing each other and burning down your capital city. Eh!
It happens.
That's right. I can make a new one, will a new one. I don't know exactly how that part works.
She's probably doing whatever the hell she wants.
Yeah. Let's see. I was going to move on, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
And so, as far as other significant characters go, we're down to a person with an unpronounceable name.
Yeah, okay. X-A-Y-I-D-E.
Zaid?
Zaide?
Zaide?
We don't really know what you're supposed to do.
Zaid?
Maybe it's like in, like, in Mexico, they said that the X's are, like, ch's because of, like, the Mayan pronunciation. So, like, X-E-L was gel, or chel. So maybe she's Che-eyed.
Che-eyed. Jada. Jada. I don't know. Whatever.
We'll call her Zaid for now.
All right, Zaid.
She is an evil sorceress. Pops up in the second half. She's going to war against Bastion. To prove her strength or whatever, and then when he's like, I'm the most powerful, greatest hero of all time, she's like, okay, I'm your humble servant. But then the entire time she's manipulating him to try and, like, grasp more and more power and become a huge dick.
Yeah, though I'm not exactly sure what her motive for that is.
I feel like if she was somehow going to have the power by proxy, or she just wanted him to, like, overstep his boundaries so much everyone got pissed and, like, killed him, and then she could, like, not have an adversary again?
That development really went nowhere.
Yeah.
Because she was setting this up, and he was pulling all this power to himself, and there was the war, and she seemed to be kind of secretly enjoying this whole process. Yeah. And then he disappears to the city of insane people who used up all their wishes.
Yeah.
And when she realizes he's been there, she knows her plan has failed and gets murdered for no reason by her own creation.
Yeah.
And so
just get her out of the way.
Well, we needed her name to start the X chapter.
Yeah, exactly. I think that chapter started out with, like, Zaid died.
Yes, I believe that chapter, the first part of that chapter basically went, Zaid, having fulfilled her purpose, was stomped to death by monsters.
Moving on. Yeah. We don't need any women, living women in this story.
That's right. Kill her. And we're going to kill her by stomping her to death instead of the traditional way, which is via Bastion's terrible stories. 3-Dub killed his mom!
3-Dub.
So I had a theory while I was with Zaid that she at one point said, I control these empty suits of armor, basically, through my will. I can control anything that's empty. It's like, oh, so she's trying to, in some figurative sense, empty Bastion out, and then she'll be the only one with power over him. And, well, maybe it was. We don't know. We have no idea.
Yeah. It didn't work, so we don't know. She was just basically there to be a bad guy. So when she was like, do all this, and Atreyu's like, no, listen to me, because I'm always smart and always right, and I'm perfect.
And always virtuous.
And Bastion could be like, fuck you, Atreyu, and the reader could be like, ah, how dare you insult your best friend?
Exactly. Gasp, this horrible, evil woman is splitting up the besties.
This two pure love between these young boys don't need any interruption by a corrupt female force.
Wait a minute.
Ancient Greek love.
It's getting all Athenian in here.
It's getting all platonic up in here.
That's right. Oh.
The traditional sense, not the friendship sense.
Right.
Wink.
Wink.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just going to bring this up since I've been kind of...
I think we're ready. I think we're ready. I think we're ready for it anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not like there are a ton of really well-fleshed-out characters in the book. Because there are, like, a billion that we didn't mention because they're only there for, like, a chapter or less. Like, or two pages, you know?
Right.
But it did come to my attention that there are almost no women whatsoever in the book. And most of them are either evil, like Zaid, or dead, like Zaid and his mother, or, like, maternal, wifely characters.
Yeah, like the fruit tree lady. Mm-hmm.
And the wife of that one astronomer. Yeah,
the gnome wife.
Yeah, the gnome lady. And those are actually all of the female characters that I can think of off the top of my head. I can't even think of another one. So, I just thought that was kind of appalling. I mean, I know it's a kid's book, and, like, a lot of the creatures in Fantastica, I was willing to give a little bit of leeway, because, like, a fair number of... Oh, the donkey! That was a female character.
The mule.
But she did end up getting married and having children, so she...
That was her wish, to be able to... tell her children about her encounter with greatness.
That was kind of funny.
I don't want to be great. I just want to tell my kids that I met a great person.
I don't have kids because I am a mule. And he's like, you can have kids.
Hooray.
I was like, oh, that's like one non-shitty thing he did. Except he did it kind of for a shitty reason. So.
That's true. Which even he, at the time, realized was kind of shitty.
Yeah, she's like, but I want to just keep carrying you, man. But yeah, I thought it was, like, really crappy that, you know, in the first half, the significant female notes the childlike empress, and you don't really meet her until the very end of the first half, and she basically just disappears right away again. And then the main female character of note in the second half, I would say, is Zaid, who's this, you know, evil sorceress lady who dies off, is of no consequence.
Yeah.
And that's about it. And even when he gets back to the real world, it's like Bastion and his dad... and the male bookstore owner. And, you know, I don't always like to harp on it because you don't have to have, like, an equal split of men and women all the time or whatever. But sometimes it really bothers me. And in this book it bothered me because, like, why do all the knights have to be men trying to rescue this princess?
Because that's what knights do, Gabs.
Yeah. Just kind of stupid, so it's my little rant.
Alrighty.
And I'm done now.
Alright.
And we can move on.
I don't know, as far as plot points go, I thought, we've kind of been bagging on this, and
it's more fun to bag on.
It is, and I guess I'm kind of headed in that direction. I want to pump the brakes for just a second say that there are a lot of interest. This book is full of interesting setups, and none of them pay off. So, like, there's, oh, spider monster. Okay, we're just going to... swish past that. Oh, these gates. That's really interesting. Like, there must be... like, he's going to have to do all this cool, interesting stuff to best. Oh, we're just going to kind of swipe past that. Oh, here's this... God, what else was there? The House of Changes. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that was going to be a big thing, and the house basically does nothing to change him, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Like, I thought there was going to be this whole sequence of weird rooms that he was going to, like, interpret a message or something.
He just needed a mommy to take care of him.
Right, exactly. or the dream mining. And there are little, like, moments through all these things that are... where I kind of go, okay, I like a little bit where this is going. I mean, the dream miner guy, I guess I like their one conversation where he's like, well, you might need to do this. And Bastion goes, oh, well, I already used that up. And he just says, that's bad. Well, you could do this. Well, I used that up too. That's bad. Like, he just, everything he's saying, Bastion's like, I already fucked it up. The guy just, his only response each time was, that's bad.
That's bad. I don't know, man.
Sounds like you might be in trouble, kid.
I looked through all the pictures, the dreams, and I don't recognize anything.
That's bad.
Yeah. Well, I thought, like, the beginning of the second half, you know, where the new plot line of Bastion being in Fantastica happens, with that, like, crazy forest that grows all night.
Yeah.
And then, like, the desert of many colors and the, like, the lion of death or whatever during the day. Like, that was pretty freaking cool setup.
Yeah.
But I don't really know its purpose.
Right. And that's, I mean, ultimately my issue with these things. Or actually another one is the werewolf who was, like, a creature of neither world and who was supposed to be bad, but who I'm willing to believe might have just been cranky. and him kind of starting to hint at some philosophical things that, oh, well, maybe that's going to be an issue in the second half of this book, this whole lies versus dreams versus wishes and all that, and nope, didn't pay off.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a ton of interesting stuff, like, look at this, like, crazy fantasy world with all this, like, pretty creative, like, I haven't read a, well, in the second half there was a lot of fantasy trope that you see everywhere, but, a lot of new creative stuff that you don't really see, like, luck dragons and the childlike empress and all this stuff that's pretty cool, but, I was thinking of you, actually, when I was reading it, Ben, because you always say that, you know, like, if the world building's really good, you're willing to forgive a lot. It's like some books where I'm like, eh. You're like, well, the world building was good, so I'm willing to forgive it more. And we all know that I'm less willing to do that. Yeah, in this case, like, the world was interesting, but I just didn't really care that much.
Yeah, I guess it was a, I don't know why, because I usually am into world building. I don't know why this one didn't grab my imagination as much. And, like, the only thing I can really think of is that maybe it's just not consistent enough. Like, the idea of a universe with all this stuff in it, but where there are at least some threads tying things together, and you can speculate about, oh, I wonder how this thing works, or this thing works. Like, I get into that. And maybe because this is so much of a fantasy world that it's just, you can walk three steps and be in a completely new place with completely different rules.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can wander for 30 years and never leave the region you're in.
Yeah.
Like, I just, and some people have powers except they don't, and other people don't have powers except they do, and like, everything is always malleable, so there's not really a set universe where you can sit and speculate. So, I mean, the fun in this kind of imagination is dreaming up new settings. Like, if you wanted to write fan fiction taking place in Fantastica,
oh yeah,
that would probably be fun.
Just do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
It works, basically. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
And there was a lot of that fate element, which I know has less to do with, well, like, I guess it actually does have something to do with world building, because Fantastica, without this, it is written, or here's the bullshit rule based on some fantasy YA trope. There is an awful lot of fate that controls things, and that is a really annoying plot device.
Yeah. One of the things that bothered me at the beginning of the book, aside from Atreyu going on all these trials and tribulations that didn't seem to trial or tribulate him too much, was he really reminded me of the main boy character in The Alchemist. And I hesitate to make that comparison because The Alchemist, I think, is kind of just philosophical bullshit. And I think this book is, I would say, better than The Alchemist. But just that, like, I don't even know exactly what it was, but it was just, like, the wise boy pursuing a dream and knows, like, seems to know exactly what he's doing and succeeds at everything and doesn't really seem to learn anything and it's just great. Like, Atreyu was that kid.
Yeah, he kind of was. And actually, even at the beginning of his entry into Fantastica Bastion, maybe even a little bit, because the whole desert sequence was totally making me think of The Alchemist.
Yeah.
And I referenced that via Twitter, and then I had a thought at one point. I was like, okay, if Bastion... Right around the time I was thinking, if Bastion turns himself into the wind to escape the desert, I refuse to finish this book. And about the time I was thinking that, he escaped the desert without becoming the wind, so...
I would have totally told you if that actually happened. That would be too amazing.
That's true.
I'd be like, I have to spoil this. This was ridiculous.
By the way, everybody, drink.
Well, it's several drinks for that. Okay, let's see. So let's talk about some themes.
Yeah, so we have referenced a couple of these a little bit. It definitely is the power of love ending.
Yes.
To really escape back to your home, then you have to figure out what your final true wish is. And it's, I just want love.
And to make your last final true wish, you have to forget your name.
Right, yeah, to be able to love, you have to forget yourself, at which point I just said to the book, fuck you!
Whatever.
It's how love works for you, but...
what if I love myself more than anything?
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Can you love someone else if you can't love yourself?
Exactly. Another common theme.
Yes, exactly.
This book is also big on the power of friendship, ostensibly between Atreyu and Bastion, although we have already...
I guess Atreyu and Falcor...
Atreyu and Falcor are pretty good buddies.
And then Atreyu and Bastion, kind of.
Although Atreyu just secretly and hates Bastion.
Bastion and the H Knights of Who Gives a Damn.
He doesn't even care about them. Get out of here. No one cares.
I'm the strongest, I'm the toughest, I'm the fastest. No one cares.
Go away.
It's like they're setting up to be characters from another story, and they just wandered into this one by accident.
Yeah. And do you like how the fourth one of them, he was, like, pursuing the princess, and he had to prove how great he was, and he finally did it by rescuing her from the dragon! And then she's like, okay, I'll marry you, and then he's like, well, now that I've done the great thing, I'm not interested in you anymore. You shallow, dumb woman!
That was kind of silly. Now you defeated the terrifying dragon Smurg.
Tolkien. Right, so then there's also the element of pride/hubris. So, you know, Bastion getting too big for his britches and then learning humility. And him trying to briefly crown himself emperor when he learned that the people who did that, you know, completely forgot who they were and were just stuck in Fantastica. And his little guide around that city was telling him, well, these people have forgotten completely who they are, so they don't know their past, and if you can't remember your past, then you cannot have a future.
And this is about to happen to you, and also, yoink, I stole your turban.
True.
Damn monkey!
Fucking monkey.
And then, also some thread of unintended consequences in the second half when Bastion's doing all his wishing and altering things. There are a couple of things he does with good intent and then realizes that, ooh, maybe I just made something bad happen. I created this terrible dragon that should be nearly impossible to defeat even for a great hero. He's like, oh, shit, is that knight actually strong enough to slay this dragon, or is this dragon be terrifying the locals forever now?
Yeah, like, killing a bunch of people and destroying crops, and what we were talking about, those, like, sad worm creature things he created that are, like, crying all the time and create these, like, beautiful sculptures, and, he feels really bad for him, so he's like, okay, you're gonna, like, form chrysalis, and you're gonna wake up and you're gonna be happy butterflies! And then when they, you know, transform their super obnoxious butterflies...
They go from being annoying crying worms to being even more annoying laughing clown butterflies.
Yeah, and then they go around, like, destroying all this beautiful stuff that they made because they're fucktards. And Bastion's like, oh, maybe that was bad.
Maybe that was bad.
Maybe it was.
Maybe you should have thought that one through. I mean, the name alone, anything named, any group you name the Schlemoofs, you know is going to be a pain in the ass. Nothing named Schlemoof is dignified.
What the fuck is that? Why would you do that?
You'll be the Schlemoofs, and you'll always be laughing at each other for your stupid name.
For looking like idiots. Yeah.
Sounds kind of vaguely like a Yiddish insult, too.
Schlemoof. Schlemiel.
You can't trust this guy. He's a Schlemoof.
If you're Jeff Goldblum's dad in Independence Day. Yeah,
totally.
Symbols, we just decided everything in the book is a symbol.
Yeah, and I have to, I have to ask the question. I feel like this question would come up were that mentioned in the book, but when everything is a symbol, does that mean nothing is actually a symbol?
Woo!
I mean, I'm being glib, but I would, the last, couple chapters especially, I was I just kept rolling my eyes and saying to myself, I get it, it's a metaphor. Can we please move on?
Leave me alone. Let's see. Okay, so I guess interesting point that we haven't covered yet. Oh, excuse me. There's kind of a recurring little thread that End throws in there throughout the book, where, you know, he'll run into the gnome creatures, and they part ways, and they're like, well, eventually that guy becomes super famous for doing this thing, but that's another story for another time.
Well, yeah, because nearly every chapter he introduces a character and has them go away.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, oh, well, they went on to do other stuff that is probably interesting. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah, and toward the end, it feels like he does that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was just imagining that.
No, it definitely did happen more often in the last, I don't know, quarter of the book, maybe. I was going to reference that line initially in the plot synopsis before we decided to go all alphabetical.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another story for another time. And toward the end when I was reading that, I was like, oh my goodness, this is not even cute anymore. It did make me look up how many books he'd written, though, to see if he, like, did a bunch of never-ending story spinoffs, but right. He totally didn't, so...
Like the Neverending Story Anthology, short stories from the world of Fantastica or something.
Considering how popular the book is, I bet people would read the shit out of that, but...
Yeah, his little bio at the back of this edition said that Neverending Story was like a number one bestseller for 3 years in Germany.
People love that shit. But he would not be swayed by capitalism.
That's right.
Michael N. Alright. So we move into wrap-up, strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
Okay, well, the first weakness that I really have to point out is that arguably the second half of the book is unnecessary and has nothing to do with the story in the first half of the book. Or, because second half of the book is where Bastion does his growing, perhaps the first half of the book is completely unnecessary to the real story, which is the second half of the book, which is also the half of the book I was less interested in.
Yeah. I honestly think it's two different books, and that it should not be in one book. And the only reason it was because they wanted to do that A through Z thing. But that plot change is, like, jarring enough that... You're like, why is this not a sequel?
Yeah, why
to the first one?
Why are things still happening?
Like, I mean, I get it, I guess, but especially when the American version is called The Neverending Story, and the end of the first half is based entirely around, like, them reading the book over and over and over again, turning into The Neverending Story, and then Bastion, like, breaking free of it and naming the Empress. It's like, okay, you solved the entire problem of the first half of the book. We now know why it's titled the way it's titled. And there are still 200 pages.
Right.
Why is this happening?
What are you doing?
So,
well, I got to letter L, and then I realized I needed more book. Couldn't you just edit that a little bit and make it not the alphabet?
Yeah.
Nope!
Yes, not.
I haven't introduced my X character yet.
Oh, yeah. I would say my main problem, my main weakness would be that the characters are not that relatable. Bastion, I never really felt sorry for him or cared that much about what he was going through.
No. He annoyed me more than anything else.
Yeah, I thought Atreyu was just kind of boring and perfect, and I liked the childlike Empress, but she wasn't around for that long, so kind of had an issue with that.
I like the potential of the childlike Empress,
yeah,
maybe more than I like her. I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about there are so many interesting setups, and I really don't feel like a single one of them paid off.
And that's really the big strength, is that if you, you know, want to read a book with a lot of, with a good fantasy setting and a lot of imagination going on, like, there's a ton of shit happening in this book, and a ton of new stuff and setups and things you haven't seen before, so that's the main strength, is the world of Fantastica. Like, this guy wrote with the imagination of a child, I guess you could say. It's
so crammed full of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, if you wanted to, if you're a person who loved The Neverending Story and you were upset that cynical adults reading it for the first time are being total dicks about your beloved favorite book, or well-loved beloved book anyway, I mean, you could take 10% of the ideas from this book. I mean, you could chop it into 10 chunks and just develop the ideas in it, and you would get a book out of each one of those 10 chunks.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many ideas in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, I mean, honestly, maybe to the detriment of the book, maybe it's part of the problem that he had so many ideas and he, I mean, didn't want to write a 10-volume series. He didn't want to turn into, like, an Oz thing.
Yeah.
He didn't want Fantastica to be that big.
Yeah, so then that, like, that way it's kind of harmed in that you can't connect to any one thing because you move on from everything so fast.
Yeah, and I mean, and given how well it sold, he certainly, if he'd wanted it to become a 10-volume thing, he would have had every opportunity.
God, if I had read an entire book about the fucking Schlemus, kill somebody.
Volume 7, The Schlemus.
Butterflies adding, like, fuckheads for 400 pages.
You'd be spending the whole book wishing for Schlemus genocide.
For death.
Like, oh, I hope the stone troll things eat them.
I hope that lion comes.
Yeah, I hope the death lion wanders through and desert-fies their asses.
The lion was a badass. yeah, so. Okay. Question.
Well, as long as, yeah. If you're annoyed that we're picking on your beloved childhood book, the only question we can come up with is, why do people love this?
I'm just laughing at,
I'm sorry, guys.
How mean we are.
We are so mean. I was bored for most of this book, so I am holding a grudge.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised because I actually ran into multiple people while reading this book who, well, you know, either online or in real life, who, oh, The Neverending Story! And then I was like, is there something wrong with me?
Right?
And so I was, like, really glad when you were like, I'm having a hard time finishing this. I was like, thank God, I'm not the only one. I'm not, like, some kind of freak who, like, I'm just dead inside.
Right? Like, your frozen soul just sitting there seething. Why is there joy? Well, if you're that way, at least I'm that way, too.
Yeah, I guess. Let's have a partner in crime.
That's right. So, our verdict, in case it wasn't obvious, I didn't really care for it.
Yeah, I would say I enjoyed the first half pretty well. I didn't love it, but I thought it was kind of interesting. And then by the time I started to do the second half, I wasn't that interested anymore. And by the time I got, like, 300 pages in, I was like, how are there still 100 pages left?
Right.
I was texting Ben, this story is really never ending. Like, it literally will never end.
Why?
I will die reading it.
I will say a little bit in defense of this book that I don't hate it. I'm not upset at it. It's just deeply flawed is what I think.
Yeah, I was, talking about it just now, I guess I sounded angrier than I felt while I was actually reading it. Maybe because it's kind of fun to bag on something.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
That's probably the motivation behind that. But yeah, the second half of the story, it was mostly just bored. I wasn't like, this is the worst thing ever written.
No, yeah.
By any means.
So, yeah, I mean, I couldn't really recommend it to someone based on my experience with it, but it definitely went down a lot easier than some other things.
Yeah.
Now,
if you had to tell me that I had to either reread The Neverending Story or reread Watership Down, I don't know what I would do.
Ooh, yeah, it'd be a tough choice.
I'd just be like, ugh, I don't wanna.
I guess I'd probably reread The Neverending Story over Watership Down. Watership Down was just, it was dreary and long. This, even when it was kind of uninteresting, at least had, like, a new thing every chapter.
That's true.
You're like, oh yeah, this thing. I forgot about it, because I didn't care the first time either. Instead of, I get it, rabbits, Jesus.
You're all dying, okay,
that's,
whatever.
That's right, get out of here.
Stupid rabbit.
Drink, by the way. one of these days, we're going to do an episode where we play the novel ideas drinking game while we record. Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
That'll be a fun one. So anyway, what you reading right now?
I'm reading 1776 by David McCullough. It's about, kind of George Washington, but like George Washington in the Revolutionary War in the year 1776.
I was just realizing that it didn't register earlier when we were outlining, but I realized that I've seen that book on bookshelves like 100 times and been curious about it.
When it first got published, it was like a huge deal, and I've been meaning to read it for like 6 years or something. And what I'm trying to do in 2014 is, like, read a fiction and a nonfiction at a time. Because I'm trying to do better about reading more nonfiction. And I borrowed that from Dad, like, 2 years ago. So.
Might as well read it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting so far.
I am reading Bellwether by Connie Willis. And it's,
all of.
Yeah. Only a couple chapters in, but so far I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's about a woman who studies fads and is kind of funny and snarky in a very fun way, and I have no idea what is going to happen because no plot has happened, just characterization so far.
I will mention, if you remember Doomsday Book, which was the Connie Willis book.
Which we both really liked, yeah.
Yeah, we read it like right before our year-end review, and we said, we don't know if this is on our top five list because we just read it, but you know, over a year later, I would say that I still really like that book.
It still holds up. It's definitely one of the handful of books that really stands out from the last mm-hmm. couple of years. I mean, like, if I peruse the list, then I go, oh, yeah, I enjoyed that one. Or, that was kind of whatever.
Yeah.
But if you just said, hey, name five books that you've podcasted and caught me off guard, then I think there's a pretty good chance Doomsday Book would
make that
reel list right off the top of my head. Yeah. And also, speaking of the year in review, we're coming up on that in the next couple weeks. I think by the end of the month, we're going to try to do
end
that.
End of February.
Yes, I guess the end of next month, since it is the end of the month.
Although this might be posted at the beginning.
Yeah, this will probably get posted on the 3rd, to be honest. But, yeah.
Either way, I have another, like, 3 books to read before we do our That's right. review, so.
And we'll probably do that in a similar format to what we did last year, because that seemed to work pretty well. But definitely, if you have any suggestions for things we might do, or if there's anything you want to hear about specifically, then let us know.
Yeah.
And you can do that, of course, by leaving a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can send us an email, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
You can tweet us at Novel Ideas Pod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
And if you do that, rate, review, comment, etc.
Etc, etc.
So, next week...
Yeah, we're going to read Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. It's kind of a classic of American literature. It was written in the 1920s, 30s-ish, I think. This is my, you know, our high standard of research, as always. But I see this on classroom reading lists when I was tutoring. I saw it fairly often, so it's a good classic to put out there for anyone who, you know, is looking at books they had to read in school.
And I would add to that, but I know nothing about it aside from the title.
Oh, there you go.
So, it'll be a new experience for me. So I think that does it.
Yep.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.